member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 9th of April, Anno Domini 2016. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose. Nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Oh, and we paid our dues. Yes, before we get started, let me thank, we made our goal this year. This time around, we made our goal. Thanks to all those of you who were kind enough to donate. And for all those of you too cheap to donate, it's safe to listen to the show again because we aren't begging anymore.
But we should continue to ask if they're members.
We should.
Yeah. I mean,
they should volunteer that information.
Yeah.
All right, let's start with our news story of the day. Microsoft's browsers last month continued to swirl toward the drain of second place. The several editions of Internet Explorer and Edge lost a combined 1.4 percentage points of desktop and notebook user share in March, the fourth consecutive monthly decline of more than a point and the 15th straight month of declines of any size. IE and Edge accounted for 43.4% of all browsers used to reach the web last month. A year ago, that number was 56.5%. Unless the slide suddenly slows, and there was only a hint that it would, Microsoft's browsers will drop into second place in May. There is an outside chance that Microsoft will lose its number one spot in that application's browser rankings this month. It's possible that IE will stem the bleeding. March's losses were the smallest in 4 months, but the synchronized climb in Google Chrome's user share signals that the decline of IE will not be halted anytime soon. And by the way, these metrics lump IE and Edge together at the moment, so this is really both browsers at once. Chrome boosted its share by 2.5 percentage points last month, which absorbed all the losses of both IE and Firefox. And it's poised to replace Microsoft's browsers as the world's most used. Chrome ended March with a user share of 39.1%, 14.1% higher than a year ago. Firefox also lost ground in March, dropping 1.1 percentage points to 10.5%, its largest one-month loss ever. Well, actually, since December of 2014, Firefox is staring at a single-digit user share as early as May. Apple Safari and Opera Software's Opera were flat last month at 4.9 and 1.7%, respectively. About one-third of all IE users ran an unsupported version last month and so did not receive the usual security updates. Microsoft released March 8th. Let me repeat that. One-third of you are running unsupported versions of Internet Explorer and so are getting no more security updates, so you're vulnerable. By forcing customers to upgrade to a newer version of IE or alternately to turn to Windows 10 and its default Edge, Microsoft demanded that users change browsers. Now, that had a disastrous impact on IE's user share as people rethought their browser choice and then abandoned Microsoft browsers for rivals, notably Chrome. Basically, what they're saying is, well, I got to change browsers anyway, and all my friends are talking about Chrome. Let's see what it looks like. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is my browser of choice is, and your choices are Chrome, Edge, Firefox, Internet Explorer, Opera, Safari, and other. Leave a comment. Right now, we've got, I have to scroll down to see what that number is, 28 votes, and Chrome has about 46% of the market, which is pretty dang close to what it actually is, followed by Firefox, followed by Safari, and so far, nobody's voted for either Internet Explorer or Edge, but then our users are ahead of the curve and all things anyway. Now, I absolutely know you're going to have more to say about this, so if you scroll down on the right, you will see under fascinating stuff, you'll see the forums. And the second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, at least, the very first poll discussion is the show discussion. I clicked the wrong thing. Is the poll discussion, and the very first poll discussion currently is 9 April 16. What's your browser of choice and why? So far, 9 posts. So join the conversation there and join us here. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415.
In the recent Pwn to Own contest at Kensack West, they pay bounties for people breaking into computers live, you know, at the show. Microsoft Windows had 6 vulnerabilities. Mac OS X had 5. Adobe Flash had 4. Safari had 3. Edge had 2. Chrome had 1. No one bothered attacking Firefox because it's considered too easy and it doesn't give you any street cred.
And there's no bounty for it.
And there's no bounty for it.
It's so wide open.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no bounty for it. Yeah.
And that's sort of what we've talked about in the past, is that people will find, well, the good guys, hopefully, find bugs and report them to the companies. But many of them are now holding on to their known exploits until one of these shows to get paid. Microsoft and Google and Adobe pay for bugs, and usually called a bug bounty. Apple doesn't, which is interesting.
Why is that?
Well, it's your civic duty to report a bug that you find, apparently.
Wait a minute.
But on the other hand,
Apple couldn't afford it.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, wait a minute. The way they take advantage of people, telling them, you will pay this, you will do this, you will do that. What incentive is it for an Apple person to do that?
Well, on the other hand, they don't want to encourage the criminals. So if the bad guys find an exploit, they can sell it. They can turn it into the company to get paid for it. And one of the concerns with the recent FBI thing, where they said they got into the phone, we don't need Apple anymore. No one's telling Apple how they did it. Apparently, they're briefing senators on how they did it. And so we'll know pretty soon.
Because yeah, right.
You can't keep this, as Apple's pointed out, you cannot keep this stuff secret.
You cannot.
Not with the government.
But yeah, so now does that mean the FBI paid somebody for an Apple exploit because Apple wouldn't?
Could be.
Yeah. And so
like
does that
say,
mean,
it's all about the money.
Yeah, and does that mean the government is now going to have to start hiring more hackers to break into these phones to get the data they want? And the thought there is, well, the NSA does that already, don't they?
Yeah, right.
It's interesting that companies that offer bounties, people wait for these shows to make the money.
It only makes
only
sense.
$500,000 were awarded in the most recent Pwn to Own, which is less than it was last year. So the people didn't get the biggest prizes, but it's interesting to see how the good guys and the bad guys, you know, kind of fight each other. Mm-hmm. The bad guys will sell the same exploit a bunch of times. The good guys will sell it back to the company that they found it at.
Right. But yeah, there's some Pwn to Own, PWN, the number 2, OWN, is a contest that they hold every year. And the basic idea is break into these devices. And they put up a high-end PC, a high-end Mac, a high-end Chromebook, a high-end Linux box. And then you not only win bounties for breaking into them, but you get the box. So in general, there's $4,000, $5,000 boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. And of course, there's the prestige, bragging rights.
Yeah, for at least 1 year.
The single biggest payout was $85,000 for someone pwning Microsoft Edge.
Yeah. Yeah, so they got, if you were the first to do it, you got the machine it was on. Plus, you get the bounty for breaking into Edge, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's different amounts depending on what you do. Breaking in gets you so much money.
Mm-hmm.
Owning the system gets you more money.
Mm-hmm.
Repeatable exploits get you more money. Actually, not just taking over the system, but making that repeatable. So if they reboot, you still own it. That gets you more money. So there's all kinds of levels of what you can do. And people have made millions over the years, millions of dollars from the Pwn to Own. And you're right. Some people save exploits specifically for this thing. And that's okay too. Most of the most of the companies realize that if you're saving an exploit, you're not selling it to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we're hoping it's the good guys doing all this.
Right. Yeah. Well, even if it's the bad guys, they're not going to let that exploit get out
until they derive some
thing, because
otherwise they've got to derive some benefit from it. Right. Otherwise, why do it?
Unless they think they can make more money selling it on the black market.
Right. Well, and that happens anyway. Yeah. But anybody who finds these things, and of course, the deal is part of the deal that you sign up for is if you break into the machine, you have to tell them how you did it,
mm-hmm.
or you don't get the bounty.
Yeah.
Right.
But you know when the bounty is $50,000, $85,000, $90,000.
That's not pocket lint.
That's not pocket lint, and for many people, that's more than they would make if they sold the exploit.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the theory here behind doing it. So
it's all they're going to do, like you say, on the black market is make a few bucks. They're not going to get the thousands.
Right. Well, they'll get thousands, but they won't get tens of thousands.
Right.
Right. So, you might, and it depends on the exploit, right, and who you sell it to.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's stuff going on the deep web that we never see. It's now a difference between the dark web, which is websites that have gone away, websites that don't exist anymore. That's now the dark web, apparently. And the deep web is the web we don't see, the places where all the Tor servers are and all the, you know, people are selling arms.
The underworld.
It's now called the deep web, apparently.
Hmm. Where credit cards are used and sold. And that I've seen, you know, some documentaries on that type of stuff where people put up credit cards and offer folks, you know, you can get so many dollars per, you know, on this credit card per, you know, like 2-for-1 or whatever, and they deplete a credit card within seconds.
Yep.
Within seconds. You know, they could have 7-8 grand, say, on a card, and boom, gone in 60 seconds.
Yep. And I've seen a demonstration of the deep web, and there's some...
Scary stuff.
Really scary stuff on that.
Just like in real life.
Just like in real life.
Don't go down dark alleys with $20 bills hanging out of your pocket.
Exactly. 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 What?
Unless you know the shout.
Unless you know the shout. Right. That's Pwn2Own, and they do that every year, and it's actually a good thing. It's you know, white hat hackers for the most part. And some of the smartest flipping people, cheese and crackers.
Shh.
Smart people.
You'd think, you know, if they took some of those, you know.
If only they'd use their power for good.
Yeah.
Well, they are.
I mean, some of the dark underworld ones, if they turned around and, you know, actually made some better money off of it, like you say, being honest and pulling stuff out, wow, what a waste of a good mind.
Yep.
That's basically what it is, you know, a mind that, you know, could accomplish so much more. And
well, and of course, a large part of it is because they don't get caught. You know, it's hard to know who they are, and it's hard to catch them. When you do catch them, not much happens. There are a couple of nations on Earth who, if they find you, will kill you if you break into their systems.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly, they don't get broken into much.
Gee, I wonder why.
Exactly. So that's a problem. And of course, as you said, and it wasn't a story I picked for this month, I'm afraid, but for this week, I'm afraid. But the government is actually having trouble hiring white hat hackers.
Oh, really?
They can't get people of high enough quality because all those people are working in the private sector. A lot of places are hiring them to be whatever they need. You know, to be white hat hackers so that they, you know, a white hat hacker is somebody who breaks into a company because they're asked to. They used to be called tiger teams. I don't know if they still are, but they'll break into a facility. They're hired to break into a facility and then tell the people how it happened. And those are white hat hackers. And they make a lot of money. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. And we are Soundbites on the truly great, and thanks to all of you, solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll be right back.
listen to that all day. But welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite and Soundbites with a Y and with an S. We have Joe all the way from Martinsburg, West Virginia, back on the line from last week. Hiya, Joe. What's up?
Hi, guys. I called last Saturday about Windows 10.
Right, and wireless.
With it dropping our network connection.
Yep.
Well, we went and got a new router, like you suggested.
Yeah.
It's a TP-Link AC7. It's Windows 10 compatible, but my wife experienced a dropped network connection.
Yep.
Yesterday.
Here's the other thing to think about. Who provide? Well, never mind. It doesn't matter who provides your internet service, but check to make sure that they did not also give you a wireless router.
Some
internet service providers, when they provide you with a router for your home that you plug your router into, that router does wireless as well. So you may have two wireless routers in your home fighting each other.
Oh, you mean the cable modem?
Yeah.
Oh.
So check with your vendor to make sure that the router you have from them, check to see whether or not it also does wireless.
And many companies charge you extra. They'll charge you for the cable modem. They'll charge you extra for a wireless version.
Right.
Well, we bought our cable modem. We bought it at Best Buy.
Well, we'll check to see that it doesn't do wireless.
Yeah, I'll have to check the box.
Yeah. Because if it does, that's certainly, we had, actually a friend of mine reminded me this Sunday night in Second Life. He had exactly the same problem for weeks before we stumbled on, do you have two wireless routers in your home? Because you can put up multiple routers in a home, but you have to do it carefully. And there are ways to do it right and ways to do it wrong. And guess what? By default, it's wrong. So it is possible that that's your problem. It does, and that may intermittently mean that you get one or the other. You should also be able to tell by looking at the wireless connection and seeing if, in fact, it's not that you don't have wireless, but you're connected to a different router which isn't connected to the internet as such.
Yeah, I never thought that these people could also be wireless too.
Yep. So I would check that next. The other question is, if they're both Windows 10, is this happening while she's using it or after it goes to sleep?
No, that's just it. It happens, you know, when we're using it. It's not happening as often as with the old router, which is a good thing.
Yeah. Okay, so we talked a little bit about this last week. There are a couple of things that you need to check. One is this wireless router that's new. But also see what's between you and the router. We have seen electrical stuff in the walls. We had somebody who's, you know, every time their furnace came on, the hot water heater came on. Because it was an electric hot water heater.
Or like a lamp.
Yeah. Or like a lamp, or like, you know, pretty much dang near anything. Hair dryers, a high range television.
Microwave oven
certainly would be a problem. Check to think about what's in between you and that router in line of sight. Right. And as if the, you know, if the walls weren't there and you could see the router, what's in between? Refrigerator.
Do you live in an apartment or a standalone house?
A villa.
Aha, see what's on your neighbor's wall. Maybe their microwave oven is blasting into your room.
We've also seen where somebody's computer was right up against, was right up against the wall, the outside wall of the house. And if you looked at the outside of the house, all the electrical boxes were right there. So by moving the wireless router about 20 feet away, all of that went away. All of that interference went away.
Yeah, I know, but it's just going to be really a really difficult thing to do.
Well, but the point is, before you do any kind of moving or anything else, map out your house. Mm-hmm. In the sense of what in terms of electromagnetic emanations are coming from where. So check the outside if it's an apartment building. Check the neighbor. Talk to the neighbor if you're in that kind of situation. Look around your house and see what's line of sight between you and. For example, when I first put a router in my house, my wife wanted the library to be her computer room. Well, we live in a house that was built in the 1890s and was built by a builder. So the wall, if you're standing in our house and the library's on your right, farther down the hall on the right is the stairs, and that wall curves. Well, guess what? There's chicken wire in that wall, right? And to help make that curve.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And it's a complete Faraday cage. Where I had the router, the one place in the house you do not get a signal is where my wife wanted her laptop. So I had to move. Obviously, I had to do was move the router. Not a big deal. Yeah. But I had to do that because even though line of sight said, well, there's nothing there except, you know, the edge of an armoire, which is wood, and a wall, which is wood, and curved. And I bet there's chicken wire in there. So I moved it about 5 feet, about 10 feet away. And the signal was fine from then on.
You can also get an electromagnetic field sensor to tell you how the change in EMF and map things that way.
And in fact, most phones will do it nowadays.
A lot of times they're sold as ghost detectors.
Yeah.
I've even found one on Amazon. That's their second line. Paranormal investigators will measure the change in EMF, and that means it's a ghost.
Right.
No, that means you walked past the electric line in the house.
Right. It's only $20.
Yeah.
But many phones will do that. You can download a free app that measures the strength of the wireless signal.
Mm.
And so as you walk around your house, in fact, at RIT, when we wired a building, we used to get minions to walk around and measure the wireless signal in various places.
Get the signal and make sure everything, yeah.
Right. And so you can do the same thing in your house. Make a wireless signal strength map of your house, and you may well find that exactly the place that you've got your laptop is a lower signal. Not no signal necessarily, but a lower signal.
Which then gets overridden by a different signal nearby sometimes.
Right. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much, guys. I just want to say you guys do a great job. I've been listening to you guys since 1990.
Wow, you're old.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Or he was really young when he started.
He was young when he started. We were already old.
Yeah.
Well, we, not you, we.
Okay, I remember, Nick, one time I ran into you back when Windows 98 first came out at the Armory when they had that roll-out party thing.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That is a long time ago.
Yeah. Wow. They had like the first real flat-screen projection TV.
Yep. I remember that event. Wow. And the t-shirts. And yeah, I remember the event. Very cool.
Yes.
Very cool, John. Now, of course, you're living in West Virginia.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
All right. Well, thank you very much, guys. You guys do a great job.
Thank you, Joe. Keep listening. Keep smiling.
Will do.
And we'll come down and visit you in West Virginia one of these days. Wheel in West Virginia, WWVA. Never mind. That's a long story and a long joke.
So tell us the punchline first. There you go.
Yeah, right. No, that isn't the punchline.
Yeah.
But
the aristocrats.
Wheeling, West Virginia used to be the strongest radio signal in America. You could get it pretty much anywhere all night long. Wheeling, West Virginia.
Just like
WWVA.
Like one of the big stations here in town. You can pick it up in Florida when we went to visit my grandparents.
Yep.
I used to listen to CBS Radio Mystery Theater at night when I was supposed to be asleep.
Yep.
I had my little transistor radio under the covers with me.
Oh, yeah. When things weren't clogged, I can remember picking up, I think it's down in Florida, California.
Yep.
And late at night, like 1, 2 in the morning.
I once was on my CB radio at night. This shows how old I am.
Mm-hmm.
Asking for directions, and I was in where was I? Somewhere in the Southern Tier, in some little town in the Southern Tier, asking for directions. And the guy's giving me directions, and the first two made sense, and I was following along. He said, turn left here. He said, there's no left here. He said, yeah, there's a left there. I'm sitting at that. It's this intersection. I said, I'm in that spot. There's no intersection. There's no other car. Finally, I said, where are you? He said, well, I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. What? We had to skip, you know, yeah, from the ionosphere, mm-hmm, and I was connected to a guy in Nashville. Yeah. And the first two streets were good.
Yeah.
And then we were completely done. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. I was just thinking another solution maybe to some people's wireless problems is that they don't realize how much devices are connected wirelessly in their house, and all of a sudden you connect, and then it kicks you out.
Yeah, yeah. You can, generally speaking, you're not going to overwhelm the higher-end devices these days. You can, theoretical limit is 255 devices. Practical limit for any Ethernet connection is 100. Beyond that, you start getting so many collisions that you start dropping.
Yeah, my cable modem is terrible for that. I mean, I think you can get maybe 8, and then it you can't connect to it anymore.
Right, and I was about to say that the cheapest devices you're going to find on the market are the ones that come from the cable.
Yeah,
you know, any internet service providers stuff, they're not going to spend for the high-end devices. And the high-end devices aren't that expensive. $150, $100 buys you a pretty high-end device.
Yeah, which you would figure with the amount that they're buying, they're getting a pretty good price on it because they're covering a lot of the country.
Yeah, exactly. But they're not in it to make you happy.
It's just like the space shuttle. It's built by the lowest bidder.
Exactly right. You know,
and you're putting people in it.
Yeah. And so many people have the wireless home security cameras, wireless doorbells, wireless thermostats. We see now a lot of electric and water meters have wireless in them. So the meter reader doesn't have to actually drive up your driveway. They can just slowly drive by your house and get those readings.
Right. And many people have a desktop, which may be wireless these days, but certainly a laptop, a phone, maybe a watch.
Cordless phones often run on the same frequency.
Cordless phones are on the same frequency. Yeah, exactly. So you're right, Mark. There's a million. And Joe, I know you're still listening. If you have cordless phones, that could be a problem. When they ring, suddenly the use of wireless on that device jumps to a significant level. And it's not only receiving, but now it's also sending because it's got to reach the handset, which is probably cradled in the device, but it doesn't know that. So suddenly it's sending out on that same frequency. That's the 2.4 gigahertz frequency, which is why a lot of people set their home routers to the 5 gigahertz frequency. Most devices do that now, will do either 2.4 or 5 gigahertz.
I had that same problem. I ended up just getting a 6 gigahertz phone.
Yep, yep.
And that kind of alleviated that problem. And then you might want to think about going in and changing the channel that he's using.
Yep.
I found that
most of the routers default to 6.
The channel I was using in my house, a lot of people in my neighborhood were using it.
Yep. Again, it's the default. You're right.
So there's another thing that he might want to try that might keep him from losing his signal.
Yep, yep, yep. We had a number of people who had a similar sort of issue where they just had the router from their cable provider, and when they switched to another provider, like for example Greenlight in my neighborhood, that went away. So we had to buy our own routers anyway. Most people spent about $100-$150 and got a decent router, and all their wireless problems just went away. You know, the only change was a better router.
Yeah. Sometimes things are too cheap for a reason.
You're right. Yeah. You get what you pay for, but you also pay for what you get.
You can have it cheap or you can have it good. You know, pick one.
Right, right.
Well, thank you for letting me put my 2 cents in.
No, thank you, Mark. Those are good points. Thanks.
Thank you.
This is the problem with something like wireless. We don't see it. You know, so it's hard to know what we're looking at. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites and the truly great, and thanks to you, solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I'm caught up in my cable. There we go. I couldn't move. I was caught up in the cable of the
headphones.
Caught
in the moment.
Caught in the moment. We don't need to read that right now. We'll read this one.
CRS?
Yeah, exactly. Here's an interesting question. Here's an interesting news item, however. Sales of desktop 3D printers, the majority of which are still purchased by companies and schools, skyrocketed last year to the tune of 70% increase. From 2014 to 2015, the sale of desktop printers with a retail price below $5,000 increased 70% to 278,000 sales. Desktop sales are booming because they're inexpensive. I don't particularly think of below $5,000 as inexpensive. We'd have to get way the hell below $5,000 to be inexpensive to me, but okay. Yet many of them produce decent models from early concept modeling of new designs. This is really similar to what happened when AutoCAD was introduced in the early 80s. It didn't do everything that the really expensive CAD software could do, but it did enough, so the value was good, so a lot of people bought it.
Yep.
And the same was true of early PCs, you know, compared to more expensive Unix workstations or mini computers from DEC or other companies. As a whole, the additive manufacturing industry, additive manufacturing is another word for 3D printers, 3D printing, grew almost 26% last year to $5.1 billion industry. Worldwide revenues actually expected to reach almost $13 billion by 2018. Revenues from all products and services in that industry, you know, consumables and et cetera, will exceed $21 billion. In 2015, 62 different manufacturers were selling industrial-grade additive manufacturing systems that were valued at more than $5,000. That's twice as many as the 31 companies that sold them in 2011. So the industry is transitioning from a prototyping past to a production future with 3D printing. Opportunities for additive manufacturing and production applications are orders of magnitude greater than for modeling and prototyping. The money is in manufacturing, not in prototyping, and that's trickling down to the average person. Right now, it's kind of just a thing people do. You know, I wanted to print my 3D dice, my 20-sided die or whatever it is.
Yeah, little printers that can do like a 2-inch or 3-inch square box or $500 or less.
Right. And so people are beginning to experiment with them. I've seen people make stands for smart watches so that you can, you know, set it up on that stand and look at it overnight or whatever it happens to be. And there are some pretty good ones out there. So our question to you, do you own a 3D printer? Or are you thinking of buying one? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, this looks pretty nice. I just found one called the XYZ Da Vinci Jr. for $350. And it's in a fully enclosed plastic case.
Right.
The second best one is $379, and that looks what I think 3D printers home ones look.
Yeah.
Circuit boards and frames and gears and wires. And basically it's a kit. The first thing you do is build it yourself.
Yep.
And then you use it to build more printers.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so $350 gives you a neat little one.
$400 also gives you a pretty good one.
So the bigger you want to print. I've even heard about 3D printing cars.
Yes, they do.
They
3D print
chassis.
Houses now.
Yep.
It's not plastic, of course. It's an extruded concrete sort of thing. But you have prefab houses.
Mm-hmm.
They're now 3D printing the prefab parts.
Cool.
So what they can do is they bring a 3D printer to an area, they start churning out the parts, and they build the homes in place. There's no, the only thing you're transporting is the giant 3D printer, which is
huge.
It still has to be
humongous.
Huge. But even so, it's cheaper to transport that than to transport the prefab parts of 50 different homes.
Mm-hmm.
So then all they need is the raw material, which they can, again, do cheaper. So it's all economy of scale. You know, if you're only building 5 homes, mm-hmm. it's cheaper to transport the parts. If you're building 100 homes, it's cheaper to transport the stuff that makes the parts.
Yeah.
So it's actually pretty cool.
There's a couple of groups in town, Interlock Rochester and Rochester Makerspace, where they've got guys making a whole bunch of stuff. And some of the core things start with the 3D printer.
Yep.
And so if you're interested in seeing some of the stuff like that or getting more information about it, you know, these guys, and it's basically a users group, are more than happy to show off that stuff.
Do you remember Jan Thomas from Right Woman? Yeah, quite a few years back, I believe it was in early 2002, they wound up sending me to school because they were working on what they called Z printers.
Yep.
And basically what it was is sand, and they add the glue to the sand, and it makes passes.
Yep.
And then it was really cool because once it was done, all of a sudden you just see this flat thing. Well, you hit the vacuum to suck it out.
And, suck out the excess sand.
The excess sand. And here's these precision parts.
Yep.
And you
yep.
could add hardener to them and that. And they could also become rubberized.
Yep.
So Nike was one of their big things that they do different soles and that type of things for sneakers and that type. Creating prototypes. It was cheaper to do it in the sand because you could rubberize them and they get the feel for it, and then they could ship it off wherever they are manufactured. Here, make this, and you know they could do the injection mold from that.
Right now, a lot of it is rapid prototyping, which is what you're talking about. You make one, and then you send it somewhere to be made by traditional methods.
Yep.
They're also using it to actually make things. They've been experimenting on the space station with a 3D printer that uses sintered metal. It's essentially metal dust, and they use a laser to fuse it. So let's say, you know, rather than send up 5 or 6 wrenches,
mm-hmm.
right, in case they lose one in space,
right,
they send up this thing, which now lives there, and the blueprints for a wrench. So if somebody loses a wrench, somebody else punches a button and makes a new wrench.
Cool.
Now, I say makes a new wrench. It takes a day to do that. These things are not fast.
Yeah, they're not
instantaneous. Even the plastic ones that you'll find at Hackerspace or Maker Faire. But they do make them, and they make them well enough to be used in certain circumstances. Obviously, the ones that are made out of sintered metal become a metal part, and so you can actually use them. But the process has gotten so precise now and so good that they're actually talking about the fact that they can build parts in these things. And I've even seen it done with plastic that when you take them out, they work.
Yeah.
So you can make like a universal joint in this one pass thing and you're done. It's not like you even have to put it together when you're finished.
This guy just made a device, you know, with parts of it.
Yeah.
And it talking about lasers. That he incorporated a laser into it. And what he does is he sits there and you can put it on metal that's, say, totally rusted. It gets rid of rust.
There you go.
It removes rust. So they're showing it on like this old Cadillac bumper. But they were showing how they made all these parts and they put it together. And it's a laser. And they just scan it across. It's like this wave. And they're removing strips of rust. I'm thinking, that's cool. Use a machine to build this other machine to get rid of rust.
Yep. And so, you know, you can have, and that's the thing I was looking at yesterday.
They are so cool, though, those machines. There's a company that made parts.
There's a company that made a robot.
MIT.
MIT made a robot that looks pretty much like it could just, it's pretty much done. You do have to hook up a couple of things to it because it's a hydraulic robot, so you have to hook up.
A battery,
and you got to fill it with water.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, other than that, it is ready to go. It could walk out of the printer if you could get the thing to.
I just think it's cool. Some of the videos in that you see these robots, you know, actually making other parts.
Yep.
As they're forming stuff in it, it's like, Well, this is what, and just pulling it up and pulling it and shaping it.
Yeah. Now, again, those of you who have seen those videos on YouTube, generally speaking, they've sped those up.
Yeah.
It takes quite a while to make these things.
Yeah, it's not as fast. As
right, but they work. And
yeah,
that's
the cool thing.
It's the old joke. It's not how, when you see an elephant dance, it's not how well it dances. It's the fact that it dances at all.
Yeah.
So there's some pretty amazing stuff that they're doing with 3D printers. I really, really want one, but I can't justify it. I mean, it mm-hmm. would be a toy, and I know it would be a toy. And while I can go out and buy, you know, those little mini drones for $50 and spend $50 on a toy, I don't see myself spending $3,000 on a toy.
But the thing with this, though, is who knows? Somebody may come up with the idea, just like Kinko's or that type of thing.
Well, there already are places like that. You upload your plans, and they send you a printed thing.
Yeah, or, you know, and you could create it. You design it at home, send it to them, and then you pick up your part.
Yeah, they do that. There are places that now. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Daylight and Dollar Shark. Well,
yeah. There's one 3D printer, and most of these use extruded plastic. So what happens is...
Yeah, Shapeways is one of the big ones.
Shapeways. So what you do is you get this spool of plastic, which those are not cheap either. But you get this spool of plastic, and it melts the plastic, and it extrudes it from the little nozzle. One of them also does, wait for it, chocolate.
Seriously? Yep.
So there are companies now that are starting up doing wedding things like place cards for the wedding tables that are actually made of chocolate. So, you know, Dave Enright will be sitting at this seat, mm-hmm. right? So they make a little card that says Dave Enright on it. They make a little chocolate card and then hand, you know, with using the 3D printer, they put on white chocolate, Dave Enright.
Yeah.
And that sits there so you could eat your place card once you're sitting there.
Or go around, really mess up the wedding and just start eating everybody's
card. Exactly right. And all the other things.
No, you weren't invited.
Make.
No place card.
Right, right. But, you know, give everybody a little chocolate rose at their mm-hmm. at their place or whatever it is you're going to do.
Try again in a little bit.
Oh, for
that's you.
That's Cortana speaking to me. Thank you, Cortana.
Hey, Cortana, shut up.
Only here on live radio.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so you can do all of these things now with these 3D printers, and I'm kind of fascinated by them, and I really, really want one. Slash, yeah, that's the big new one. It's 10 times faster than any
50
other.
50 times faster, it says. It says.
Oh, 50 times faster. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure it is because it costs $250,000.
No, that's pledged. They've got $230,000 pledged of their $50,000 goal.
Oh, well, that's not bad then. How much, what do you get for a $10? Is this on
Kickstarter.
Kickstarter?
Yeah.
What do you get for $10?
Yeah, 25, 1,000, you get the printer.
Yeah, I don't have $1,000. Kickstarter, if you've never seen Kickstarter, it's a place that lets you donate. People say, well, I want to start this thing, and rather than going out and getting venture capital, they actually put it on Kickstarter. You donate however much you want to donate, and there are levels that give you prizes, very much like what doesn't happen here enough. But basically, the idea is you donate and you get something. So mm-hmm. I've done a number of campaigns. I got a little tiny mini drone that way, and I've gotten a bunch of different things. You had $25 here, $50 there. You're helping start new ventures and you get a thing from it.
You just have to worry. Remember that more often than not, the thing doesn't get funded.
Well, if it doesn't get funded, you get your money back if it's a legitimate place like Kickstarter.
Yeah, and if it does get funded, it might be years before you see your thing.
Right. Yes, and you understand that. That's part of being an entrepreneur, a venture capitalist.
I've been following on Security Now, they found on Kickstarter a coffee mug that has, not a mug, a thermos, that has this material in it. So you put your super hot coffee in it, and it draws the heat away from the coffee to make it the perfect temperature. And then it takes the heat back into the coffee to keep it at the perfect temperature. Because your coffee is too hot when you first get it, so you let it cool, and then mm-hmm. it's too cold. So it's this perfect thermal conductive mug. And it's been 2 years now, and they're still waiting. And they get an update every now and then. And then the last one I heard about was that we got some prototypes from China, and they were close, but the manufacturing process isn't there yet, and so we're delayed again. So after two
years.
Well,
and that happened with the little mini drone that I got. Yeah. You know, the first prototypes came back bad. The second prototypes came back bad. The third batch were fine. So by the third batch, it all worked out. All right, listen, that music tells me that we are done for the first hour of this show. But you lucky little devils, we're going to be here for a whole nother hour. So all you have to do is sit through a couple of minutes and we'll be back. With Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. You can join us, of course. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And we will be back. We will be back shortly with a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. And thanks to you, we will be here for a little while longer. It's Soundbites on the truly great and thankfully member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece, Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMCJazz901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm still Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. For those of you using Ubuntu, and I know there are more and more of you, every time you listen, Canonical has released an update that patches 4 bugs, including one that could allow an attacker to execute code. Ubuntu users have been notified of a reasonably pressing update that addresses 4 security issues, although none are remotely exploitable. That is to say, you have to be sitting at the machine to use these exploits. The bugs affect Ubuntu 14.04 long-term support, which gets 5 years of coverage. The most serious is a use after free flaw in a Linux kernel driver. The medium priority bug could allow a local attacker to cause a system crash and may allow them to execute code on the system. It also fixes a low priority timing side channel vulnerability in the Linux extended verification module. This makes sense to you if you're a Linux user, which an attacker could use to compromise system integrity. A local attacker could also trigger denial of service due to Linux kernel incorrectly counting file descriptors. This is also considered a medium priority issue. The fourth issue, which is low priority, could also be used to cause a denial of service due to Linux kernel not enforcing limits on the data allocated to buffer pipes. Ubuntu desktop users get notified daily of any available security updates. So for most of you, it should be just a matter of clicking OK and let it install them. And in fact, for those of you who have never used Linux and are Windows only users, and particularly before Windows 10, most updates to Linux don't require you to reboot. They'll essentially happen in the background while you're doing other things. Every time I get an update, and you get one or two, you know, I get one a day for a week, you know, you look at it, and if it doesn't, let's say I'm on the web and I'm using Chrome, as long as that update doesn't include Chrome, I just click OK, let it happen in the background while I continue to do whatever I'm doing. It doesn't affect it at all. So it's very cool when you are a Linux user. So no matter what operating system you use, do you regularly update your systems? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. This is one of the things that has always made Windows more vulnerable than Linux, because you essentially have to stop whatever you're doing and let the update happen and then restart your machine, it interrupts you from what you've been doing. And so a lot of people postpone the updates. And that causes you to be behind in updates, which is what causes the exploits to be available on your machine longer, which causes you to then turn around and have a problem. So,
and then on the opposite side, we get bitten by an update that breaks something, and so we don't want to put the updates in just in case.
Right, right, right. And that also, I've honestly never seen happen on Linux. And the same, you know, on a Chromebook, you just get a little notification that says, well, we've downloaded all the updates. Next time you start your machine,
I love it.
You'll get the new version of the operating system.
People are finding that now when they wake up in the morning and their 3 a.m. updates have installed.
Right.
They're now running Windows 10.
Yeah. All right. On the Chromebook, it's not quite that drastic. It's the same operating system you had yesterday.
The same desktop. And matter of fact, I showed my Chromebook to somebody else just this past week. Stopped in because they were wondering about getting a laptop. And I, well, what are you doing with it? And again, another person, what do you really run off of it? Well, I do my email and I got to do some letters. Yeah, you can do that on here. So I did a little demonstration. They go, I got to rethink this.
Yep. Yeah.
And they go, how much did you pay for it? $270.
Yeah.
$270? Yeah. $270. For a 15-inch screen? Yeah.
And a 9-hour battery life?
And it's fast. I mean, because I flipped it open. I just, there it is. On. Huh? I mean, or you, did you already have it on? I go, no. Open it up. It turns on.
That's from cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. People don't believe it. They think you're tricking them in some way.
And just the fact.
Because they're used to Windows taking 10 minutes to start up.
Well, the other thing, they go, well, wait a minute. And this person knew about, because I had put it on their machine, super anti-spyware malware bytes. I don't need it.
Yeah.
Why? It's a browser. It's not an operating system. It's a browser. So you don't have to worry about that? No. Nope, not at all. Darn. And then I relayed the story of how you were sitting right here in the studio.
Yep, yep.
And you get a warning on your Chromebook that your Windows is infected, that you better call and take action.
Yep.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
Yeah, this is just a reminder to all of you. If you get one of those notices that says your Windows is infected, call this number immediately. It's a lie. I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
Yeah.
It's a lie. The whole thing is a scam. I got it on my Chromebook. My Chromebook doesn't even use Windows, and I got that notice. So if you get that notice, please just ignore it. Do not ever call any of those numbers ever.
And the other thing is there's going around again, is the folks that are sitting there saying that they got a call from Microsoft. Microsoft has not, nor will they ever, call you to let you know that your machine is infected and that you need to update.
And if you're searching for their phone number, it's going to be very hard to find.
Yeah.
And make sure you're at the right company. You search for Microsoft help, you search for Apple help, Google help, you'll find dozens of ads that pop up to the top of the list, people advertising that they give help.
Yeah.
And you don't know how reputable they are. They're not the actual company you think you're calling.
Right. They'll sit there, they see Microsoft, and they see in small print, certified.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're Microsoft certified help, and you're going to pay for that. And it's not very free.
Even that could be lying.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Right.
And I mean, it's so easy for a lot of these places and scams to sit there and tell you, well, go to this website. And they could look as official as all get out. Because all it takes a person to do is sit down with the software and copy and paste other logos, watermarks, and everything else from other, whether it's a bank or whatever website they want to duplicate, and make it look official. And they could scam the heck out of you. You say, well, I went right to their site. It said, no, you didn't. No, you don't. And as I've always said, just like reading emails or that type of clicking on emails. If you have to think for 2 seconds, and that's probably too long anyways, about an email, opening it up and everything else, delete it.
Right.
Do not open it. Delete it. And if it's that important, they will get back to you. Or you can pick up the phone. This thing that's, you know, been around for a lot longer than computers, you can pick up the phone and actually call them.
Yep.
And find out if there's an issue.
But yep. don't search for the phone number. Look in your documentation.
Yeah, right. Because
you won't find it when you search. I was helping a customer with a Verizon email problem this week, and we had to call Verizon, and it took me forever to find a tech support number, because I could find a lot of numbers to buy Verizon stuff, but not tech support. And finally, when I was on the tech website, a chat window popped open, and so I'm looking at URLs, I'm looking at security certificates. Is this really Verizon? And then they send me to Citrix for remote access. And is this really Citrix? There are legitimate remote access programs. The bad guys use them too.
Yep.
So I was really nervous, and I'm making sure I'm really at the right company. I watch what they're doing. We had one customer tell us that she, you know, she got one of these pop-ups and called them, and they remoted into her computer. They were taking so long, she got tired and went to bed and left them connected to her machine all night long.
Oh, jeez, Louise. Well, remember, it was a caller called in because I was having the same issue. I was getting to where it was supposed to be in the router and it wasn't letting me out, and you had to sit there and say, cancel it for right now, because they wanted to verify information.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do anything, and that went away.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the warnings get scarier and scarier. Because don't close this window. You know, you won't.
Well, it took me to the Frontier site, and, you know, I talked to a couple. I actually called Frontier folks, you know, and asked them, you know, at DSL and that about this and that. And, oh, yeah, well, some, and they were very vague, you know, and it's like, okay. I think they were doing something, and they screwed it up and shouldn't have been doing it. And so I just ignored it, and it went away.
Those of you who own your own routers, by the way, every once in a while you should check for updates, because often the router software gets, the router firmware gets updated, and most of them, you know, have a place in there. You push a button and on the web page of the router and it updates. Look at your documentation and be very careful as to what gets into your router. Some of the less expensive ones are fairly vulnerable to being taken over out on the web. Now, you're semi-protected from at least some of that, but not much. So be careful.
It's like every month we hear about a router vulnerability discovered that left, you know, the WAN port open for administration, or a hidden service that lets the company remote in to fix problems.
Yeah.
And the bad guys have been using it for decades.
Yep.
You can't keep this stuff secret.
The first thing I did when I bought my new router was actually before I got it, I decided I wanted this model, and I went online and looked up all the advisories on that particular model. And so I had a list of them. I had I was still at RIT at the time, so from work I had downloaded a thumb drive with all of the updates and all the everything on it. So when I got the thing, the first thing I did was update, and then I felt fairly comfortable.
And for a lot of the cheap routers, you know, the $100, under $200, they never get updated, because it's cost the company money to fix a problem and push an update, and the routers are too cheap to bother doing that with, so they never update it, and so you're always vulnerable to outside attack.
Right. Most of them will have some update available somewhere, but it's up to you to find it. They're certainly not going to send it to you or remind you how to get to it. But you want to be very careful of what you do and where you do it. And Steve is right now on a site called scambusters.org, which we should probably put in the, what you call it. Scambusters is a pretty cool.
There's a list.
Yeah. Scambusters is a pretty cool place. They do some pretty decent reminding of what bad stuff is out there. And
check with Scambusters. Check with Snopes before you pass on some dire warning.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute. Doggone it. There's a thing called Snopes.com. S-N-O-P-E-S. Snopes.com. One of the people who started it, as near as I remember, for somebody from Rochester. And basically, you go there and search. You know, when somebody sends you this Facebook thing that says,
"I won the Facebook lottery the other day."
Congratulations!
No, I never entered it, but I still won it.
Yeah, right, right. And you'll never get anything, but you won it.
All I need to do is pay the entry fee now.
Yeah, right, exactly. And you know, when you get these things that say Bill Gates will send you $1,000 or whatever those are, go to Snopes and look it up before you start passing that nonsense on. All you do when you pass that stuff on is you just lower the IQ of the entire world. So, let's stop incredulously just sending stuff out that isn't true. Look it up. Use your brain a little bit. Why in the name of heaven would Bill Gates send you money? Bill Gates honestly does not know you exist, does not care that you exist, wouldn't care if he knew that you existed. So he's not going to send you money. Bill Gates is not going to send you money. Warren Buffett is not going to send you money. Mark Zuckerberg never sends anybody money. He's done some charity work.
Yeah, they're going to send you money. They'll send a to a charitable organization.
Right.
Hey, let's start one. Hey, we have one. Hey, Mark, we could use some money.
Yeah, Mark, how about it? We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not, give us a call, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we have David from Leroy, New York on the line. Welcome, David. What's up?
I called a couple of weeks ago with an issue that I was having. Dave was having the same problem with a screen from Frontier popping up on my computer, Mac. Telling me that my modem was insecure and it needed to update it, but it couldn't. And working with the Frontier people, I disconnected the router so that it was going directly to the modem, and they never, ever could get into the modem, no matter what we did. So I put it back, I wasn't getting the notice, by the way, without the router. And when I put the router back into the whole system, I started getting that notice again. So I figured, well, you know, I've had this router for 8 years and it still looks great, but it's not servicing me well. And I had wanted to get an Apple router anyway. So I gave my router to the neighbor who was more than happy to take it. It might work on his system. I ended up getting a 2011 Apple Airport Extreme router for my system. I figured it, you know, my computer's 2009, so the router's actually newer than my computer, and it's beautiful. I mean, it was a used system, bought it off of eBay, reset everything on the router. It just works beautiful. I guess because it's, you know, I'm in the Apple ecosystem, so to speak.
Right.
And I'm not getting that notice anymore. The router was almost immediately had a firmware update when I started using it.
Right.
Nothing's going wrong. So I just wanted to let you know that problem was solved by actually changing the router. I feel very, very confident in that. Secondarily, I had heard that with Apple Airports, you could do something called a WDS, wireless distribution system. And I had bought a 2002 Airport Extreme, I guess the first generation, that I wanted to use upstairs. And I was able to program the older router through using an old Mac G4 and an older version of Airport to work as a relay for the first router. So, you know, I extended my Wi-Fi essentially upstairs without the wiring.
Right. And that's actually a fairly common thing. Yeah, most systems can do that with the right setup. Apple does make it pretty easy if you have the right equipment.
They don't call it WDS anymore.
No,
it's in the newer. Did you get the flat router or the tall router?
It's the flat router.
The flat one. Yeah, the tall ones are their newest ones. It just says extend my network.
Right.
Because that's more lay talk. So people know what that means more than set up a WDS relay.
Right. But yes, whether it's WDS or it's an extender for a regular router or whatever, that's a fairly common thing that people can do. And as with you, if you've got a weaker signal in a certain part of the house or upstairs or whatever, you put that relay in there and set it up correctly, and it just essentially boosts. It relays the signal to another, say, floor.
The other thing we've also seen is that the newest routers, in Apple's case, the tall Airport Extreme router, uses the new AC wireless standard, which is higher power, longer range, and higher speed.
Right.
And in many cases, that alleviates the need of needing a repeater or extender, because your main router now has enough power to reach the edge of the house anyway.
Well, I'm a guy. I wanted to see if I could
Got to tinker with it, yeah.
Got to play.
Yeah. I've actually seen routers, many routers are maintain their profile by having the antennas internal to the little box, mm-hmm. but you can get external antennas. I've actually seen routers with 8 antennas, one at each corner and one in the middle of each side, and they provide signals pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, I've seen those at a school that I sub at. Sure.
Right, interesting.
Right.
This one article I just found, WDS only operates up to G wireless. From N and later, it doesn't do WDS, it does extension. So that's why the name changed. The spec must have changed.
Right, and also if you've got a much older laptop, then you can't do much beyond G anyway.
Well, it's a 2009 laptop, so I think it's N capable, but... You know, when I tested it upstairs with the older router, I mean, it was just speeding along the internet. I have no complaints whatsoever. It all seems to have worked, and all both routers are used equipment, easily found on eBay. Yeah. And I'm very pleased. Plus, I'm pleased that the Frontier issue was solved.
Yeah.
And Dave, I did email you that a long time ago, but for some reason, even though I was using the email that you gave me, it never... Never got to you.
Yeah, I know.
A lot of times changing your router makes your internet seem faster, so you don't have to pay for higher service.
But like I said, I didn't even change my router and it went away.
It almost makes me think it was a scam. Maybe something in that brand. Because Frontier's using Netgear routers now. And Time Warner typically uses Ubi. There might have been a vulnerability in that router that allowed a bad guy to get in. And they know... It's easy enough for a JavaScript on a website to look up your IP address and then look up who your provider is from that IP address.
Yeah.
So that's what makes these scams so much more convincing is they know what browser you're using, they know your internet provider, they can get your geographic location by your IP address.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all stuff your computer tells the other end anyway.
Yeah.
It's no magic. But when the message pops up and says, you know, hi, using the Safari browser connected to Time Warner in Rochester, you need to do this. Oh, wow, how does it know? It must be true.
Yeah, no, that's why, like I said, I didn't panic. I just figured, okay, we'll just, because it kept saying, you know, I think the date was like March 7th that I had to do
something like that. Yeah.
And, all right, I'll just see what happens.
Why would there be an expiration date?
Exactly. Yeah. And I thought, okay, we'll just see. All of a sudden, March 7th came and went.
Yep.
And I never, you know,
if anything,
up
you'd
to
get
that
a...
point, I one more time said, yeah, ignore it for right now. And I thought, okay, I'll see what happens. Because it was only like 3 days more before it was supposed to happen. Something happened. Nothing did.
If anything, you'd get a printed notice in your bill that something would need to be done.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And yet somewhere, I think it was you guys that I heard that even though it may not appear on the outside that your router isn't working well anymore, I mean, after 8 years, I would expect I've gotten my use out of it. I didn't mind upgrading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
And who knows? It may have just been its time.
Yep.
Everything has a shelf life.
It's one of those boxes that just sits in the corner and is always on and always hot and always powered. And sometimes, you know, turn it off overnight, let it rest can solve problems too.
Oh, absolutely. Well, thank you once again. I just wanted to update you on all my my good news.
All right. Congratulations.
All right, excellent. Thanks so much.
Have a good day.
You too.
And congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, sometimes if it, during the setup of your service, I've seen this with Linksys routers, you create an account with Cisco or Linksys, you know, whichever one you started with, and they will then give you notices. They'll have software running in your computer to check for firmware updates. But if you just get a random update notice from some company, even if you have their equipment,
that
doesn't necessarily mean it's true.
Right.
Right. And there's a website called mybrowserinfo.com, and it tells you, you know, where what country you're in, your IP address, your browser string. But if you click detailed information and browser information, it knows where I – it sort of knows where I am.
It thinks I'm in Irondequoit.
Well, we're part of Monrobosi.
So that's where the wire is.
Right. All right. But it knows I'm using a Microsoft operating system. It knows I'm in Chrome. It knows what my connection speed is. It knows I use English as my native language. There's just a whole bunch of stuff that it actually knows. And in terms of what is good for hackers, it knows whether or not I've got cookies enabled. It knows whether or not I have JavaScript enabled. It knows whether or not I have VBScript or ActiveX or Java enabled. So a lot of different things that it knows so that it can say, oh, this guy's vulnerable to this. I can send him that thing. It's not just, they're not shotgunning like they used to.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're targeting. So they essentially ask your system, do you support Java? And if you say yes, well, here's a Java exploit.
Yep. It's similar to EFF's Panopticlick that they call it computer fingerprinting. So your computer is basically unique among all the computers in the world. Because of the screen size you're running at, the window size you're running at, the fonts you have installed, the color depth you have installed. So all of that stuff makes your browser unique among other browsers.
Right. Right. So they can find all this stuff and tailor which exploits they use against you to whatever you're actually vulnerable to, that they can see that you're vulnerable to it. So for example, this machine is not using the Microsoft XML parser, so any exploit that goes after that, they're just not going to bother to send me.
Right.
Right. So it's getting much, much, much more sophisticated out there, which again goes back to what you were talking about with Chromebooks. When you're using a Chromebook, most of the answers to these questions are no.
Yep.
And even if you do get, even if they send you an exploit, it can't take hold because
there's no
operating system as such underneath it. So it becomes a different issue. I've actually seen my system ask me if I want to download something because I've got it set to not download automatically when it goes somewhere. And sometimes I'll just say, yes, I want to see what I'm getting. And I get a virus. You know, obviously, it's not going to take hold on my machine.
Yeah, no, it's not going anywhere.
It doesn't auto install. It will not auto install. So, whereas if I go to a website and that website detects I'm using a Microsoft operating system of at least this vintage, and I have this installed and I have that installed, it'll send me a tailored virus that will automatically install in the background. That's how a lot of people get the problems that they have. Whereas, obviously, with a Chromebook, it can't auto-install. There's no auto-install option.
Yeah.
So
just ain't going to happen.
Right. And
didn't actively install it. You went to a page that had a malicious script on it, probably in a malicious ad.
Right. And generally speaking, it won't even show up. So that's one of the nice things about Chromebooks. You don't, you know, it's set it and forget it. I'm seeing a lot of people recommend to their parents and their grandparents and all the people that they are doing tech support for, get a Chromebook because A, it's easier for you, and B, it's easier for me.
Yeah, they set up the email and they're good to go.
Yep.
So most folks, that's what they want to do. Surf the web, get their email. They want to write a Word document, that they can do that.
Yep, yep.
And, you know, like you're saying, Quicken and all these other companies now are offering online. So you can do a lot of stuff right there on the web. Again, it's secure. 128-bit encryption.
or more these days.
Yeah, yeah. More nowadays, and it's safe.
Yep.
A lot safer off a Chromebook than it is my open Windows box.
Yep. And this is also true, by the way, of Cloud Ready. We talked a little bit about this at the top of the show. If you've got an old laptop that is, you know, had XP on it or whatever, you don't want to put it on the internet anymore because we've scared you, and well, we should. You can run Cloud Ready on it from neverware.com, a product called Cloud Ready, which turns it into a Chromebook, essentially. And in fact, in our last Rochester Google's meeting, not only was Steve Organic kind enough, excuse me, to let me use his Dell Latitude, which he had turned into a Chromebook, to run the meeting, but also another one of our users who probably should remain anonymous gave away an old laptop with Cloud Ready on it. And so a machine that was a liability because it couldn't run any of the newer operating systems with any speed or ability, and was now just sitting in a closet waiting to be shipped off and broken down for parts, gets a whole new lease on life by putting Cloud Ready on it. It's secure and it's safe and it's a much better product.
And it's modern. That's the big thing about sticking with an old OS is you don't get the security updates. You don't get anything like that. We're seeing that in the Mac community. Gmail is putting messages on that they're not supporting browsers from Mac OS 10.6 and 10.7 and I think 10.8 now. 10.11 is the current version. So you can't blame a company for not supporting, you know, 4, 5, 6 versions ago. And so people who have never upgraded their operating system are now almost forced to upgrade it to keep using the programs they want. And the problem becomes, since they waited so long, they have to upgrade all their other stuff first. So you may have to put in more memory. You may have to put in upgrades to other programs you use a lot. And then it becomes, well, might as well just get a new computer.
Right.
And it's at, you know, you pay a bunch of money once, or you pay, you know, a few $100 every year to spread it out and keep everything up to date.
Right. And we're seeing that with a lot of people who have never updated their machines. They're still running XP and they're proud of it. And God bless them. But if you're not on now, you will be tomorrow. And don't call me.
Steve Gibson finally upgraded to XP Service Pack 3. Now he built a $5,000 Windows box with SSD RAIDs. Because he's afraid that Intel said the next chips coming out may not support Windows 7.
Yep.
So he's finally going to upgrade to Windows 7.
There you go. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on the Truly Great. And thanks to you, continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Steve alluded to this earlier, but I actually have a news story on it. The FBI may be keeping Apple in the dark about how it broke into an iPhone used by a terrorist, but now it's letting some members of Congress in on the secret. The FBI has started briefing some U.S. senators about how it accessed data stored on iPhone 5C used by Syed Farouk, one of the people involved in December's San Bernardino, California terrorist attack that killed 14 people. That phone has been at the heart of a contentious and very public battle between Apple and the FBI, one that has turned into a broader debate over privacy and security. Senator Dianne Feinstein, I'm pretty sure, was briefed by the FBI about how it got into the iPhone 5C, although she declined to give any details about the briefing. Feinstein is the vice chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and one of the backers of a bill that would make sure that the government can access encrypted data. Feinstein has called encryption the Achilles heel of the internet. Senator Richard Burr, the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee and co-sponsor of the encryption bill with Feinstein, was offered a briefing but hasn't taken it yet, at least as of Thursday when I wrote the news. Both Feinstein and Burr believe Apple shouldn't be given information on how the FBI broke into the phone, which is an obvious stance given the bill they're planning to introduce as soon as this coming week. I don't believe the government has any obligation to Apple, Feinstein said in a statement. No company or individual is above the law, and I'm dismayed that anyone would refuse to help the government in a major terrorist investigation. Law enforcement agencies like the FBI often give classified briefings to federal investigative intelligence committees, but they don't have the same obligation to tell companies how they circumvent their security controls if sharing the information could hurt the investigation. This has been particularly vexing to Apple as of late. So, should the FBI tell Apple how they cracked the iPhone? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
They did say that... the FBI did say that it would only work on the 5C. It won't work on the 5S or later. So that gives them some clue that it didn't have anything to do with the fingerprint scanner. But the 9.3 update that just came out fixed a couple of bugs and a vulnerability in iMessage, I think it was. And the problem, as they keep saying, these things can't be kept secret. So the bad guys already know about this, probably. If the good guy did, the bad guy probably does. And so the bad guys are already able to exploit this problem and steal your money. And that's the whole point, is there's nothing to stop the bad guy from stealing your money. If the good guy has a backdoor into your phone, the bad guy has it too.
And I'll guarantee you, one of the things on Apple's mind was, if we tell the FBI how to break into one of our phones, and then that leaks, which you know it will,
yeah,
then somebody's going to sue us.
Yeah.
Because we're the ones who told the FBI how to do this. We let the information out. Now Apple is off the hook for lawsuits.
One of the things that the conspiracy theorists are saying is that because it looked like the FBI's case was weak and they were bringing in witnesses for the final hearing, not just the lawyers, that they were afraid they were going to lose, so they withdrew it, so they didn't lose and set the wrong precedent in their mind. So there's still the option this could come out. In fact, there have been, three other cases, something in Boston, another one in New York.
Right. And the FBI has already said, we'll be happy to help you with those.
Yeah. And the FBI is saying that Apple has to help again, too. And one of the, I'm trying to find which researcher it was, but one of the security researchers who wrote one of these tools said that, the police initially were using it just to check on bad guys. So you get stopped in a routine traffic stop and they ask for your phone. They don't have any right to take it, but if they ask and you give it, that's fine.
Right.
And they suck all the data off of it with a box in the car. And the guy that wrote this software to do this, said that initially, it was only used for criminal traffic stops. But within a couple of weeks, all the cops, not all, but a lot of the cops were using it to check up on their girlfriends, check up on their spouses, make sure they're not, so they're spying on people, breaking the law themselves because the tool is in their car to do it.
Right. And many people believe that, whether it's true or not, I'm not saying, but I don't know. But many people are saying that, a lot of the elected officials in this country are have open pockets. Anybody can put a hand in and drop some money in there. And the minute they know what those how you break into an iPhone, they'll be selling that to the highest bidder.
Oh, heck yeah.
Well, look at the next four bidders.
I was born at night, just not last night.
Right.
The Panama Papers that just came out this week.
Right.
All these foreign governments are, using banks in Panama to funnel their money, some of it illegally.
You think?
Yeah. some of it illegally. What was it, a terabyte of data, 11 million documents over the last year have been leaked to this German newspaper?
It used to be Switzerland, the Swiss banks.
Yep.
Then it was the Cayman Islands. Now apparently it's Panama. I just can't figure out where I should be storing my illicit billions.
Mm-hmm.
What's a
he said?
What's an honest criminal? Yeah, what's an honest criminal to do?
Yeah, really. Let me know when you do.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys will be the first to know.
Yeah,
money for everybody. If I had that kind of money,
and he won't be showing up at the show.
Yeah, right. I'll be showing up at the show in a chauffeured limousine. I'll be doing. But I'm never really going to have to worry about where to keep my illicit millions. That's.
You and me both.
That's fair. Yeah, exactly. I've often said that I blame my parents. They raised me to be an upstanding, God-fearing,
mm-hmm.
American citizen, and so I don't do that stuff. If I did, I'd be a lot richer. Not happier, I suspect, but a lot richer.
Yeah.
Money can't buy happiness, but it does help calm the nerves.
So, I don't know. It could add more stress.
Yeah, exactly. That's
true.
You know,
depending on...
Well, I always said I didn't want to win the huge lotteries, you know? The $300 million this and the half a billion dollar that. I didn't want to win those. I wanted to win $10 million on the week somebody else won $300 million. Let them get all the headlines, and I'll just quietly take my $10 million and go hide in a corner somewhere.
And you know what's funny, though? There's a number of folks that have won the lottery a couple times.
Yeah.
And they're broke.
Yeah. They it's talk amazing. About that. It's a phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah.
People go and spend money they don't have.
Yeah.
I have trouble spending money I have.
Don't we all?
You know, although, you know, if I had the money, I would certainly say this is earmarked for Amelia and put it in a bank account. This is earmarked for my wife. Pay off my loans. Mm-hmm. Pay off, you know, put a new roof.
More cruises.
Whatever it's going to be. More cruises. But it would be money I have, not money I don't have. If mm-hmm. I, you know, if you get X dollars a year. I'm only going to spend up to X minus, you know, 10%.
Don't be like the government.
Well, that's always the big argument. Do you take a lump sum and invest it yourself? Or right. do you take the annual payouts, figuring they're going to know how to invest it better than you do?
No, they're not.
No.
No,
well, there
really
was
not.
One guy
but at least
did
you're guaranteed
millions,
of that payment every year.
And right. The guy got actually scammed by this investor because
yeah,
of poor investments and everything else. But yet this guy was making... good bucks off of them, and he lost the millions.
Yeah, frankly, I just take all the money, hand it over to my friend George Conboy, and say, go do something with this.
I read about one in town where guy won the lottery, and then like a year later gets busted for drugs. That's what he used his money for. And it came up that he's in jail, and his next lottery payment comes. And people were all up in arms that he still got the lottery payment. Well... he's in jail. So, you know, his heirs can use it, but
mm-hmm. right.
he still
right.
didn't not win the lottery.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. It's things get real kind of crazy when people feel they need to.
Cousins you didn't know you have come out of the woodwork.
Well, that's the big thing.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Or other folks or other things. Well, you should donate to this cause and this, you're better off now. And,
everyone
go
watch Brewster's Millions.
Yeah, right. I have very good relationship with all my relatives because there's nothing they can borrow from me. That's and that would remain.
What's Somebody really bad is you see the neighbor selling the lawnmower he borrowed at his garage sale.
Yeah.
isn't that mine?
Yeah. Didn't I own that at one point? I don't know. Maybe what you do is you start a foundation. And all the money belongs to the foundation now, and you take a salary from your own foundation. Yeah. There's an idea.
And you need a board to decide who gets the money and what worthy causes are what.
Right, right, right. And then,
or just set up a huge Roth or a savings plan and just have it send you checks every so often. You'll live off of that.
Right, right, right. I'd rather set up a charitable institution. If I made enough money, if I won a big enough lottery, mm-hmm. I'd set up a charitable institution. And then have a board run it. And you want money? You talk to the board, not me. That's how that's going to work from now on. So, but yeah, I haven't won anything.
Well, like they say, it's all a dollar and a dream.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to sue the state of New York. I have a dollar. I have a dream. Where's my money? They say all it takes is a dollar and a dream.
Mm-hmm.
I've got both. Where's
my
money?
Oh, I've been dreaming until it turns into nightmares.
The new slogan, though, maybe they changed it because someone did sue them. The new slogan is, hey, you never know.
Hey, you know? You never know, you know? And what's it up to, $168
million? $180 million is Powerball. $72 million is the Mega Millions. See, those are all the multi-state lotteries, and so there's more people have a chance of winning.
Yeah.
So then you have a bigger chance of splitting the jackpot with too many people.
Now, that one, the cash for life, $1,000 a week for life, I would immediately hand that to my daughter.
Right. Who's going to win? Who's going to live longest?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And now your daughter's of age. You know, I couldn't do that. My son's not of age yet. So.
Right, right, right. But my daughter is. I would just hand it to her. Here you go. All right, that music tells me you wasted two solid hours of your life. Once again, let me thank everybody who was so kind and generous enough to become members of the Soundbites family during the recent pledge drive. We did make our goal. We are very honored that you folks chose to put your hard-earned dollars with us. We know how every one of us has a some sort of need, and we're proud that you did that for us. We'll be back next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. I'm Nick Francesco. This is Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported, thanks to you, Jazz 90.1.